This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 36. And this one's sponsored by ComicHole.com. Hey, welcome to iFanboy.com's Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 36, as in the Wu-Tang's 36 Chambers. I don't know what that means. Anyway, I'm Josh, and I'm here with Connor.
Hello.
That's his line. And Ron.
Hey.
Right on cue. At iFanboy.com, we like comic books. We read them every week. We read a whole bunch of them, and then one of us will pick the best one, write up a Pick of the Week on the website, and then we come and talk about it on the podcast right here, and all the other books of the week and whatever else we feel like yapping about.
Whatever floats our boat.
As you know, it's a weekly review show. And this is not, you know, we don't want to ruin books for you, but we're going to talk about the books that happen. So anyway, you know, if you're coming into this, it's probably best to have read your books for the week already. That's our disclaimer, though, so, you know, you're warned from here on out.
You're on notice.
Oh, God. Anyway, so Connor's got the pick this week, and the Mighty Marvel train rolls on.
Hi, everybody. I'm not on the phone anymore. Yay!
Hey, you actually have the internet.
I don't have to hold the phone up to my ear for an hour. It's nice.
I missed you on line one. I bet your ear got all sweaty.
It was not nice, I'll tell you that.
It's like you're a 50-year-old on the phone with a girl for the first time for an hour and a half.
15-year-olds don't use the phone anymore, Ron.
Oh, right, they text message, I forgot.
Astonishing X-Men number 15 is the pick of the week, which I think probably surprised some people. I know there were some predictions on the website thinking I would pick Robin or Flash or 52 or another DC book. But no, I threw you a curveball.
You shook him up.
I did. I don't like to come at you with what is expected. I like to come at you with something unusual. I picked...
I don't like him coming at me at all.
So
I picked Astonishing X-Men because this is probably the most fun I've had reading the X-Men possibly ever. I'm not a really big X-Men guy, but I thought about it. I really have been reading X-Men off and on for most of my comic book reading lifetime. I bought it through most of the 90s and the Jim Lee, Chris Claremont era and all that stuff. And this is really what I'm looking for in an X-Men book. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't require a whole lot of knowledge of the intricate continuity that the X-Men have. It will reference things in the past, but when it does, it usually explains them. If it's really important to the story. If it's not really important to the story, it doesn't really matter. I don't necessarily follow everything that goes on or know who every character is, but usually it doesn't make a difference to my enjoyment of the book. I think Whedon is really got a good handle on how to write these stories and make them fun, make them exciting, make them serious, but then also not get mired down in the whole morass of X-Men continuity that really trips up a lot of good writers.
You know, not to interrupt, but I will.
Okay.
and I don't want to get into it because this could be a whole nother podcast topic, mm-hmm. or, you know, a whole podcast in of itself, but I'm on a really thin ice, on a short leash about this whole everyone bitching about X-Men continuity, because I really think it's become just a crutch to blame poor quality.
You ability. Bitch about X-Men continuity.
No, I know, but I don't bitch about X-Men continuity in the same way that people bitch about, like, oh, I can't, you know, like, I'm afraid to read X-Men because I don't know all the continuity, when this is an example that you don't actually need to know all the continuity.
Well, yes, exactly, you don't. 40 years away.
Yeah, I think, no, what I'm saying is that I think continuity has become a crutch to blame either bad writing or to blame, you know, or to you know, kind of put a name to the intimidation that go with these books, and it works against them. So
I think that's true on one hand, but obviously, on the other hand, X-Men fans in particular, and this is not an insult, but they seem to demand that their continuity be respected at all times.
Well, yeah, but in the same way that you would demand that Batman not, you know, be like Batman, like the continuity is like.
Yeah, but that's characterization. I'm talking about. Not every Batman story needs to be respected, and it seems like to me it's more of a red badge of courage that the X-Men fans are all knowledgeable on all the stories and all the writers have to be, or it's considered a failure. And anytime anybody ever talks in an interview about ignoring the continuity, people go up in arms.
Well, I think continuity is mixed with the spirit and the tone of the characters and respectful of the history. And but it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to fucking reference the, you know, Eric the Red number 2. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
But anyway,
and that's why this book works so well, because you really you can jump into this book, I think, with a base knowledge of who the characters are. And enjoy it. I don't think you need to know. I don't really. I've read a lot of it, but I don't know a lot of the intricacies of the different relationships between the characters. But I still really enjoy it, just from my general comic knowledge and seeing the movies and knowing who Cyclops and Emma Frost are and Colossus and Kitty Pryde. You don't really need to know much beyond that. And I think also it helps that John Cassaday is really, you know, quietly one of the most talented artists working in superhero comics at the moment, and Joss Whedon has really improved his comic book writing skill. He started off a little bit rough, but I think he's come on really quickly to become really masterful at writing comic book scripts. And I'm glad this book is coming out more regularly than that, because I really look forward to it every week.
Except that it's not coming out that regularly, because
it's back on the schedule now, though. It's monthly
now.
Yeah,
it's back on the monthly schedule, yeah, but the fact that it was on bi-monthly worked against it, because, if I remember, Josh, you didn't remember who half the characters were.
This book confused the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I was really surprised to hear that you picked it, because, and I know some X-Men, I've read the Dark Phoenix, I get the idea of the little stuff, but I was like, who's the goth chick, and what happened? Who's doing this?
See, I don't know who the goth chick is, but it didn't affect my story one way or another.
I had to go back to figure out, I guess she's the person who made everybody act weird, because she dreamed about it? Is that her thing?
Well, no, she didn't, Cassandra Nova made Wolverine and Beast act weird.
When did that happen?
On page...
Did you read the book?
Yeah, I did.
Page 3 was when she took out Beast, and, yeah, and, then, okay. and then 4, the, 5, 6, I mean, it's those were pretty clear.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
What was happening was, it felt like a montage to me, like it was going in, I'd see a flash of a scene, and then they'd go to something else. Sometimes I'd feel like the panels sort of weren't really flowing together, like things were, like there were bits of it, like the action scene between Shaw and Colossus. And stuff, and that was fun, because I was kind of like, I think Shaw has some sort of power, you know, and that kind of stuff was good, but just from sort of scene to scene, I just felt like we were drifting around a little bit, like...
Well, I think part of it is that I think you kind of need, I mean, I don't, I'm not gonna, I can't, I don't know when you read it or how you read it, but I think you need to sit down and read it, like, kind of with no distraction, and like, kind of take your time, because I was a little shaken early on, mm-hmm. similar to how you were, a little confused, but then I realized that this whole issue happened probably in the span of like 20 minutes, if that.
Sure.
Like, it was a lot of simultaneous things happening at the same time, and as soon as I got that, I rolled with it, and it was awesome. I mean,
I don't remember a damn thing about what happened in the last issue.
Right. Well,
I remember the last panel with Scott and his eyes freaking out, and I got that, and that was the first thing we saw in this one. I was like, okay, I remember where we picked up.
And then in the issue before that is when you found out that Emma was with the Hellfire Club.
I remembered that. But I don't know who, like, there's this bit in the middle with this person who's caged, and then there's somebody on a throne. I don't know who any of these people are. But, I don't know.
It's amazing.
But I also only started reading it 3 issues ago, I think, and I haven't read the first like trade.
Right, yeah, you missed it, and I still need to get you. I know I owe you that second volume of Astonishing. I almost ordered it the other day.
See, because the thing about Astonishing is it's pretty much been the same cast through all 15 issues. So if you have been reading it all the way through,
yeah, it makes sense.
I would say probably if you haven't read it, that section in the middle with the sword people, what are they called again?
Yeah, sword.
That's probably the most confusing because those people, I think Whedon invented.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. Everybody else is probably, I mean...
And that's only two pages,
yeah.
Too, so it's...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just...
And everybody else is, you know, X-Men characters from a long time, so...
No, I did fine with that. I didn't think it was bad. I was just a little confused, which I do attribute to not having read, you know, the first 12 issues or whatever of it.
Right. So just to give a little background to fill you guys in, you know who Cassandra Nova is, and you know who Emma is, of course, and you know who Shaw is.
I'm not exactly sure who Cassandra Nova is.
The Grant Morrison. Morrison's.
You didn't read Morrison's?
I read about two issues of it, and I went,
She's Xavier's twin.
Oh.
Evil twin.
Does she have the same powers?
Yeah, she's a telepath.
I see.
So that's Cassandra Nova. The person in the hooded person is Perfection, and I know nothing about that character. This is I'm curious to find out who that character is.
The chick with the dreadlocks and the blue skin?
No. The person with the hood.
Oh, okay.
At the end, this is the person in the third to last page. It says this is but prologue.
Okay. Or if you look on the cover, the upper left hand corner.
And I'm fearful that it's going to fucking be Jean Grey, and I hope it's not. I just hope it's not. Mm. But anyway. But the goth chick is Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which is was a character created by Morrison Quitely. It was one of Emma's students at the school. She's from Genosha, and she has telepathic like powers. What happens is that she says she quote unquote dreams things, and they happen where she's willing people. Like she dreamed that Kitty had lost control of her powers, and then Kitty lost control of her powers.
Right, I see.
So that's who they are. Now I didn't share my thoughts of the book with Connor on Wednesday. I said I was going to save it for the podcast. Mm-hmm. But I really did like it, and we just got to touch upon, if it's possible to hoot and holler during a comic book, I hooted and hollered.
On the last page?
No, not early. The thing was is that what annoyed me was, I'm tired of the X-Men getting beat up. It seems like the X-Men get beat up all the time, and I miss the days when they kick ass. And I know that it will come, they will win, and the whole thing.
But isn't that, the standard superhero story?
If they kick ass, the first fight, then the fight's over.
Right, but my problem is that this Cassandra Nova Beast thing was almost the same fight as when Cassandra Nova in Morrison's book fought Beast. It was almost the same scene. He was in the lab. She turned him into a beast, and that was it. You know, but when the panel where she's standing at the doorway and you see Wolverine with claws pop behind her, I was like, yeah, because I thought Wolverine was gonna thrash her. And then to only go a couple pages and see what she did to Wolverine was just a great twist. It was it was awesome. I thought it was it took it in a direction that I didn't expect. And then of course there's the last page, which was just awesome. Which was throughout this entire run on Astonishing, there have been two things that have happened: is that you've really gotten Whedon, you've gotten Whedon's appreciation of Kitty Pryde as a character, which is so cliche because he likes the girl characters and all that stuff.
But apparently that all stems from his original liking of Kitty Pryde.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that it also supplants Kitty Pryde's status within the X-Men lore, which has been gone for the past 5 years or so. That she's one of the main, she is one of the X-Men. She's one of the main ones, and she's the heart of the team. And it's great to see somebody be writing her in that way again. And then secondly is that visually, Cassaday has been referencing moments through X-Men history throughout this entire run, and to do it again like this, perfectly, was just awesome. It was just I cheered. I was in my room cheering.
Now I couldn't quite figure out if I liked that last page or if I thought it was a little hackneyed.
Why hackneyed?
I
don't know, it's just so obvious. But at the same time, I mean, I knew what it was, and it was it's a really nice drawing, and it's cool. And I guess if it hasn't been done a lot, then fine.
Well, the thing is that you got to recognize is that there are two things. In the context of what he's been doing throughout this entire series, he's been referencing, moments throughout X-Men's history visually throughout the entire run. And so, I mean, and I know that, and that's where that's kind of the whole thing where, you throw in a couple of geek references in a comic book movie, and that makes us happy, but then the rest of the people can understand it not needing to know what this is referring to. So that's one thing. But then the second thing also is that, there's a long history of Marvel – and I don't know if DC does it, Connor, maybe you know, but I mean, there's a long history of people making nods to previous artists. Like you'll see the same.
Oh yeah, they do like they'll sign it after
Ditko, right, or after Steranko or whatever. Yeah. And I just interpret that as like the next level of this, where you know they're influ- you know this is kind of, this panel could be like after Byrne.
Yes,
you know,
I think this one's actually pretty cool, and I do like it. I think that what happened was sometime around, I don't know, I blame Kevin Smith, but at some point references to things got really tiring. And it was to me, it seemed like a really cheap way of getting people to go, ooh, that's cool.
Why do you blame Kevin, what did Kevin Smith
do? Kevin Smith, to me, is him and Kevin Williamson were the people who, like, made it mainstream and cool to be postmodern and reference other things and things. Now, granted, if you study film or whatever, you know that filmmakers quote previous filmmakers all the time and whatever. But at some point, referring to other things, to me, it was just it's a little cheap and a little lazy. It's a way to get, a thrill. But in that, I got so annoyed with it that I couldn't even tell you when it was good anymore. You know what I'm saying? No?
Kevin Smith did get a little over the top, which is part of the reason why I stopped caring about anything he's done in the
last
6 years.
And I don't just mean him,
years.
Though, but like a thing
right,
that
but I mean,
he started
if you
off
can,
where like...
He started
referenced.
Off, but if you cut him out, then you forget it.
No,
you know?
That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying he started a movement where like everybody was like, haha, I'm going to mention Superman and I'm going to mention Star Wars and stuff. And that makes comic book fans and web geeks and stuff be like, isn't he cool? He referenced Star Wars. And like that's not impressive so much anymore.
That makes sense on a film level, but comics have always referenced themselves, and it's
Everything's derivative. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I see what you mean. Where if you do it too much, you can get a little tired. But at the same time, and I agree. It got to be a little much with Kevin Smith. But even then, I still ate the shit up. You know,
you're a big fan of that kind of thing, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it cracks me up. I mean, because it's relatable. It's I want to relate to something.
I guess
you know?
No, so, and that's true. That's what I'm saying is I think that it poisoned me a little bit, so that when it's actually done in a really cool way, then I can't recognize it because there's just so many other times that it's done just cheaply. But
you need to be detoxed.
I think I do. In retrospect, okay. Though, I need that thing to go away for a little while, so that this is a good one.
Yeah.
I like that. I was like, that's really neat because it's. And I don't know if they've done that panel before. If you don't know what it is referring to,
yeah.
Should I tell? I mean.
Sure, I'd like to hear if you know.
Okay. I did know. I totally saw it. The most sort of famous panel in the whole Dark Phoenix saga is the Hellfire Club have defeated everybody, and they sent Wolverine down into the sewers by increasing his gravity and everything, and they think that they've won and everything, and then the last panel is Wolverine in the same position that Kitty's in. Now it's my turn.
Yep.
And that leads into Wolverine alone.
Wasn't that, the point where he became, Wolverine.
Yeah, that was the tipping point for Wolverine. That was the kick-ass Wolverine point because from that point on he worked his way into the Hellfire Club and that was when he talked down the foot soldier. And he's like, I know what you're thinking. You know, he's 5'3". I'm 6 feet away. I can shoot. You know, and he totally kind of a Clint Eastwood kind of mm-hmm. moment. You know, and it was that really did make Wolverine.
That was his coming out party. That was the thing where you're like, ooh.
Plus, you've got the history of Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, so it makes sense. You know,
exactly.
It's not like it was Colossus. In the pose, it means more that it's Kitty Pryde,
mm-hmm. right? But there were just subtle things in this book that were just so great. I mean, the opening page with Emma getting ready for her performance.
That was great.
That was great.
You were right. You mentioned this on the website. A lesser artist would have destroyed that. I mean, not destroyed it, but not has been quite as effective as Cassidy.
And the fact that she walks in on Kitty and Peter and Wolverine in the kitchen exactly where they were last issue, there's a real sense of continuity. Because so many times you'll get a book, and in between month to month, you don't have a feeling that this is actually taking place after the last issue. Because if they change artists or whatever, you know, but the consistent writing and art team gives you that level of consistency where they're in the same room, the same clothes. It just flowed so easily, and it was great.
I really like the coloring on this book.
Laura Martin.
Laura Martin, yeah. She's the best.
Joss Whedon really gets this team, I think. Yeah. Gets how to write them. I mean, I think from a casual fan standpoint, Cassidy is at the top of his game, and Laura Martin is the premier colorist in all of comics. So, I mean, this is tough to top the book.
Tops. Cool. So enough of this. If we go
to the other side of the coin, there is.
Yeah. Well, let's do some quick bullet points on some of the other.
The Flash, the fastest man alive, number one, which I was greatly anticipating because I like the Flash, and I've been buying the Flash monthly since junior high school.
And Flash is my DC guy.
This was awful.
Oh, it was so upsettingly awful.
I was going to buy it, and then I read that it was awful from enough places that I went, forget it.
And it, you know what? It wasn't. We're not going to do a lot of this, but it wasn't the story. I think the script was pretty good.
And I, yeah, the script was good, and I liked the storytelling method of Jay's narration and then Barry's narration and stuff like that.
It
and
was
and Bart's narration.
This was the most amateurish art I've ever seen on a big time major character book. I mean, this was like, I was stunned at how bad this was, the art was.
Poor Ken Lashley's home crying.
I mean,
what sort of style was it?
It's like it's trying to be Howard Porter, I think.
With a little bit of Michael Turner thrown in.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's not good at all. And it's,
Howard Porter is a really interesting one because I really like looking at his art, but if I take it piece by piece, like I don't really like it panel to panel.
I love Howard Porter's art. I've come this close to buying so many JLA pages because of his art.
But there's something about it. Like if anybody else was doing it, if it was just a little bit different or a little, I don't think it would be good, but there's something that he does to it. Yeah, there's something in his style that makes it really good to read. I don't know.
Okay, so Flash is a big disappointment. We're going to move on.
Thumbs down.
This is
but the sick. You don't know what the sick thing is?
What?
I'm going to keep. I'll keep buying it.
I don't know. I don't know.
I have a disease. I'm
you
sick.
Too.
Help me.
The next book. This is where we tell Vertical to fast forward. We're going to 52 weeks 7.
Yes. No. Put your hands over your ears. Don't listen. Earmuffs.
How long do we keep this up?
We haven't talked about 52 in a few weeks. I thought this is actually the best one so far. I really like this one.
Something finally happens.
For one thing, we have the introduction of Batwoman, not in costume,
hot.
But the character.
Wait, here's my nitpick. Boy, I really wish I didn't know she was going to become Batwoman.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
true.
How much better?
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, I did. As soon as, in the one part where she looks down at the paper and it says Kane family, I'm like, well, there we go. There's that plot ruined.
Yep, exactly.
But I thought the best part was when Booster Gold's whole persona came unraveled, and then Ralph Dibny just lit into him in front of the cameras.
Getting badass.
By the way,
with the beard and the suit,
Ralph
badass.
Dibny is grizzled.
Grizzled.
And I did notice that his beard was more fuller and of a different color depending on what panel we were in.
Well, I think if you can control your skin, couldn't you move your beard around?
So the more grizzled he is in any given moment, he could be more beardy.
I mean, yeah, you're right. It's almost like a wispy beard at the beginning, and then it's like a full-on beard at the end.
Yeah.
With a different artist?
That's minor. I don't even care.
Yeah.
At this point, you wait till, like, week 37. There'll be stick figures. It's going to be...
I'm so tired.
Look on the, I'm looking towards the back when there's that explosion of Metropolis. He's got a full-on beard.
Like a grizzly man beard.
Desert Island, yeah, like grizzly man, like my side of the mountain.
Yep.
But I thought this was the best one. That was a really good issue, 52. So then
anyway,
last book we're going to talk about is something that's been very highly anticipated.
Wait, we're done with 52?
Yeah.
On, go ahead.
Yeah, bullet points. It was good. Last one is The Eternals from Neil Gaiman and John Romita Jr.
Whoa.
No.
You forgot about a whole stack of bad of New Avengers.
Oh, 20. I'm sorry. It's so bad I didn't even pull it from my stack.
Talk about a letdown. First off, like as I picked up the issue, I just groaned when I saw the awful Mike Diodato Magneto screaming. It looked like 1998. It looked like a 1998 X-Men cover. And I was just like, and before I even read it, I'm like, I don't want to read this because I know it's so behind Civil War.
That's really the most disappointing thing about this whole whole story.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't mind that for the last. I mean, it was like on the side. It was bugging me, but it didn't make me not enjoy the last couple issues.
No, the
I'll
last
preface
issues
this
were
by
good.
Saying. I'll preface this once again by just saying, I didn't really hate this either.
Really?
I don't think it was exemplary. I think it was sort of regular and standard, and in that way it was disappointing. But I didn't think it was horrible. Like, I was expecting to not be able to follow it. But then again, I think
that when you hold yourself to a high standard that Bendis has, if you have an ordinary issue, it looks worse in comparison.
It's possible.
Do you know what I felt like with this issue? I felt like I had a big Little League game, and Bendis was my dad, and he never showed up. I felt let down. It's like the game's over, everybody's driving away, and I'm still sitting there on the diamond, and then he comes in his suit and he's like, son, I'm sorry, I got a big meeting.
And you just go, and you throw your glove down and walk the other way.
Exactly. I was let down.
And then the piano starts up.
Yeah.
And then I turned
to drugs.
So, I mean, I thought the reveal was stupid.
It's just the whole crap.
It was just,
crap. Move on.
I mean, you're right. It probably wasn't terrible, but if you compare it to the other books,
such a letdown. But the thing is, understanding that, I mean, like I think we have an unrealistic high level standard with it now.
Oh, I mean, what are we on? What issue is this? This is issue 20.
20.
20. Yeah.
Not a bad track record.
Yeah, not bad.
I really like how they brought back, like, they were like, don't forget Alpha Flight. Yeah, all of a sudden, Wolverine, once again, Bendis just sort of not really knowing what to do with Wolverine.
He does not know how to write him.
All of a sudden, he becomes a Canadian nationalist, and he's distraught over the loss of Alpha Flight.
Tell that to Alpha Flight. Wolverine would never say tell that. Like, it was
well, that, and Wolverine's, you know, he's been around long enough to know the dude didn't have anything to do with it. It's stupid. He was a patsy.
No, but the thing is that Wolverine. No, the problem with this is that Wolverine has an emotional connection to Alpha Flight.
Sure,
he was originally a member of Alpha Flight. Jamie and Heather Hudson saved him from the woods and trained him and got him like back to civilization. So it makes perfect sense for him to be upset that Alpha Flight is dead.
Sure,
3 issues ago.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not now, all of a sudden, he snaps out of it and blames the guy.
Yeah, but why would he blame this guy? This guy had nothing to do with it. He was a shell. Well, this guy,
3 months for us is you know, a day and a half for a comic time.
I didn't mean 3 months. I meant 3 issues.
Right, but I mean, it's been a while for us, but for him, it's still the same
fight. He's got a tough shell. He's still upset.
Listen, you apologize.
It takes a little while to get through to that guy.
Bendis doesn't know how to write Wolverine. I will say I'll say it to his face.
No, I think it's true.
Yeah.
You're not going to say it to his face.
He won't. Also,
he's not going to San Diego, so it doesn't matter. I won't have to.
You'll be too busy begging Mike Hemming for a chin.
I'm going to type it and say it to his face. Anyway.
Give it to David Mack and ask him to bring it to him.
I'll write it down. You can't write Wolverine. Love, Ron.
All right, so now we get to the Eternals when I skipped past New Avengers.
Eternals number one.
Neil Gaiman, John Romita Jr.
And I thought this was great.
I'm very curious to see what you
think. I loved it.
I really did.
This was nearly the pick of the week. I don't know a lot about the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe, if it's not like Thor.
Thor's not cosmic.
He's in the sky, isn't he?
Thor's
mythology.
Yeah, but they mix in with the Celestials. They're a low rung on the cosmic ladder.
Alright, that's stretched.
And that was why I remembered when I was like, that's a weird pick for John Romita to draw this, and then I remembered he used to draw Thor. Hush. And he used to draw Thor, and they would get into that cosmic stuff every once in a while with the gods and the sort of fantasy stuff. And so I thought he was great. He impressed me.
The art was good. The art was really good. And
Romita?
You are on drugs.
From a guy who can't get Travis Charest's name right, no matter how
no,
I
remember the
line
of Charest.
Hush.
So I really liked it. I really liked the mystery. I don't know who any of these gods are, but I find the idea that
like
they're
the,
all mortal or hiding as like mortals interesting.
Did you like the Civil War tie-in?
I did. I was wondering about halfway through.
You see, that's continuity.
That's nice.
Thank you.
Where was
Thank
it?
Thank you. When he was watching the TV show about people becoming superheroes.
Oh right.
And
yeah,
they had to do a PSA
good.
About the registration.
Yes,
act.
That
and
was
I
creepy.
Liked that because it was another side of it too. Showed how that would interact with the real world. Like,
plus it showed how scary. I mean, it was like
that is totally what would happen.
Yeah. It's the law.
Here's something that you guys don't really read him, Gaiman very much, right?
No.
If you had, the sort of fallback to this is it's very familiar. If to a couple of his novels, actually, American Gods is sort of about gods living among us, and they kind of know it. And so, like, you'd be walking around the crazy old person on the side of the road. That's like an old ancient god from an old era. There was some of that in Sandman. His book Neverwhere is also sort
so. What you're saying is Neil Gaiman is a hack. That's what Josh Flanagan is saying.
Kind of is. Well, I mean, it plays off the same theme that he goes with a lot, and this, you know, was...
Look at us having no respect for the greats. Bendis can't write Wolverine, Neil Gaiman's a hack. What's next?
Yeah, well, we demand the best.
Stan Lee's dead?
Stan Lee. Yeah, do we have to remember Just Imagine Stan Lee?
Oh.
So.
It's not to say it wasn't good, and then I really, like, I got to the end of it, and I felt like I got my $4 worth. Why am I paying $4 for every other issue now, by the way? You know, and I wanted to know what came next, and I wanted to keep reading it, and so that was all really good. But it did feel like, and I guess most comic readers, I don't know if they've read his stuff or not, but yeah, it was a little. Still recommend it.
Well, I guess it's good that I haven't read the other stuff then, because I really enjoyed it.
It was good. I loved it. But I had one problem with it.
Okay, go ahead.
And my problem with it is a problem that not specifically with the issue, but with a trend amongst comics, which I've mentioned it before, but it really pissed me off this week. because
by the way, when he reads comics in his room on Wednesday nights, it's just like if you were outside of the door, all you hear is "Oh yeah, fucker, god damn!" it's a downpour of emotions.
Why do they keep on doing this?
Anyway,
what's wrong?
So my problem is that I'm sick and tired of covers that have nothing to do with the comic. And or covers that are not that are painted or photorealistic or by a different artist, or don't even get me started on variant covers. Like, there's been a trend over the past couple of years and nobody's really talking about it, so it's just happening and we're not doing anything about it, and I'm tired. So I'm standing up on a soapbox and I'm saying it out right here now. Compare two books that came out this week. The Eternals and All-Star Superman. Okay, which apparently now is just called Superman. They dropped the All-Star, apparently, in the title. But if you compare the two covers, on Eternals, what we have... And by the way, I want to call Eternals Externals, because there was a group in X-Men called Externals, and so if I do that, I apologize. But so Eternals, we've got this painted, dark, murky cover of, I'm assuming, the one of the main guys. And it's a very nice piece of art, but it has nothing to do with the book inside, other than it's just, it happens to be a character.
Note, I'm going to be disagreeing with you in a moment. Continue.
Okay, but hang on, Nat. Then you look over to Superman, All-Star Superman, and you actually see almost like a panel from the story Held Within with copy written on it where it says Superman's turned evil. And then it's got Jimmy Olsen saying, you know, if I can't get these crazy future weapons to work, I'm dead. And so is everyone else. This and it's by the artist who drew the issue, and it's relevant to the story within.
And it's stupid.
Yeah, my other example is a couple of months ago when Amazing Spider-Man came out, and it was the issue when Spidey was with Tony down. It was with Iron Man down in Washington D.C. And the freaking cover was Spider-Man sitting on the couch with Iron Man and Captain America in costume watching TV.
That was really bad. That was a bad one.
Nothing to do with the story.
But I'm DC's
been doing it. Every freaking cover that Michael Turner does. I'm tired. You're... The covers that J. Scott Campbell does. I'm tired that if you're such a good artist, freaking do an issue. Don't do a cover. Okay, and if you're gonna and if you're gonna publish a comic, give me a cover that gives me a inkling of what's gonna go on inside the book. And now I understand why they do it, because they have to solicit the comics 3 or 4 months in advance, and sometimes they don't know what's gonna be inside the book, so they just go with a cover that has the characters on it to be
not
safe.
Not necessarily.
No, I don't think that's true.
I think the point
of
a cover
is
to
more true than
the
you
point
think.
Of the cover. I'm sure it happens sometimes, but the point of a cover is to grab an eye. And they want a piece that elicits interest in the book and makes you pick it up. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you see what the plot is going to be or what's happening in the book. When you see a movie poster, you don't need it to tell you exactly what's going on in the movie. You need a piece that symbolizes the story or the characters or whatever. Now,
but I'm not talking about movie posters.
Okay.
But they serve the same purpose, though.
It's exactly the same purpose. It's to pique your interest. If the interest that you're piquing is to go pick up the cover of the... He just left. No. Now, the Eternals book, I disagree with you. Because it is not a literal representation of what's happening inside the book, but it's a figurative representation. I think this is supposed to be the main character, and something is coming out of him. So what they're saying is that there is more inside that's going on. There's some sort of great power that's going on. Behind him is all of this sort of murk, and there's some shadows and faces, and you can see stuff. So there's something more than meets the eye that we can't quite see. Now, that is exactly what this book is about.
You see, but here's my issue, though, is that if you turn to the last page of Eternals, they show all three covers for this issue. And there's this one painted cover that I got. I don't know if you guys got either. I don't know.
Yeah, I got the yes, that's the one.
Blue greenish one.
And there was the one in the middle by a artist who I can't identify with that has all the Eternal characters on it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the one that John Romita Jr. drew of the main character. If you ask me, the John Romita one, while it doesn't speak to what's going on, should have been the main cover of this, because I'm tired of getting cover art.
If you don't like painted art.
Well, no. I don't like painted art, and that's a subjective thing. But but a lot of times they don't. You know, like I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised. It doesn't say who did the cover of The Flash, but I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't this Ken Lashley.
Cover artists, specialized cover artists, have been around since time immemorial. I mean, Brian Bolland has been doing them forever. I mean,
A lot of books that sort of that's their thing. Why the Last Man has a different cover artist than the one that's inside. The Why the Last Man covers are awesome.
Yeah, no, that mainly those are.
Vertigo is actually one of the people that really do this. Guys like Tim Bradstreet, who does a lot of covers. He did Hellblazer. I don't know if he still does the Punisher ones or not. But, you know, those kind of things. I like that. That's a trend I really like. It makes books look like adult fiction rather than some panels out of the middle.
Let's talk about the Superman cover. I mean, I'm going to completely disagree with you and tell you I was cringing at this cover. This is not where I want comics to be anymore. This is, and admittedly, this is a device because Grant Morrison is writing a Silver Age Superman here.
Yeah, throwback.
And this is a throwback Silver Age cover, but this is not what I like in covers. I mean, this is embarrassing.
I mean, part of it is sentiment, and part of it is
are you
is,
upset you with know, the Powers ones that are movie posters?
Well,
ones?
You see, that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, because the thing is that they haven't done that on every issue.
Can you smell the hypocrisy in here, folks?
But the problem, but the thing is about Powers is that it's every cover has been by Oming. You see, like, it's more that I have a problem with them using a different artist to the cover because I feel like it's selling me a bill of goods that's not.
No, you're
crazy. I would agree with that only if it's not someone who you know is the cover artist. I mean, some books have an
cover.
Like, for instance, a few years ago, on Wonder Woman, Adam Hughes did every cover, and there's different artists inside, and you knew that Adam Hughes was the cover artist, and it wasn't.
What about
you weren't expecting him.
Bullshit.
All of the Preacher ones were done by Glenn Fabry and everything
Fabry,
inside.
Right,
that book would not have been Preacher if Glenn Fabry wouldn't have been the same book if Glenn Fabry wasn't doing all the covers.
But there's a big difference between Preacher, a Vertigo book, and that kind of, I mean, I can. But the thing is that let me finish my sentence. Jesus. Because the thing is that I can Connor, I'll give you the point that there might be cover artists, and Glenn Fabry just does cover artists, and we know what happens when he tried to do a book with that Daredevil target with Kevin Smith.
That was terrible.
That never came out. Exactly. But if you go back and look, all those Preacher covers related to the story. They weren't just random interpretations of the Preacher characters. They actually presented the
story. So is it less bad if it's A, related to the story, but not the guy inside, or if it's B, the guy inside but not related to the story, as opposed to C, not related and not the guy inside?
It's not so much each instance, but a little from column A, a little from column B.
I mean, look at
the Ultimates number 2 that came out this week. That was by the artist. It was a great cover, if you ask me. It totally got the point across of the story, you know, and it did it very simply, cleanly by the artist. I mean, that's the way to go. Meanwhile, like Ultimate Spider-Man, where the covers are by Bagley, the covers almost half the time have nothing to do with what's going on inside the book. You see, like, so it's...
They've said many times, though, that the only point to those covers is to make people go, ooh, look, Spider-Man, and that's it.
Right. I know. And like I said, maybe it's an old-school kind of mentality, but, like, Uncanny X-Men number 474 came out this week, and the cover was by... I believe was by the guy who did the art inside the book, but it's just a freaking pinup of the team. It had nothing to do with what was going on inside.
Aren't they all inside?
Yes, they all are inside.
Well, there you go.
I don't think a pinup cover is very unusual. I'm sure that's been going on just as long as snapshot from inside the book. I mean, Vertigo's thing for a long time has been to have specific cover artists who do probably a much nicer cover than the interior artist would be able to do within the course of a month. And I do know that a lot of times what they do with, like, 100 Bullets, they have a really, really good cover artist, and they'll give him a couple of ideas about what it's about. Maybe only, like, it's about gambling and it features this character, and so he'll go do something based on that. And it's only vaguely or sort of marginally related to what's going on inside, but it does have something to do with it.
You keep going back to Vertigo. One day it's not.
Because I think Vertigo's covers are among the best in the business, and they break every single one of the rules you're talking about.
Right, and case in point is that's why I'm not including them in this, because I'm not really talking about, like, alternative or that sort of that angle of things. I would expect them to push the envelope because they are Vertigo.
Wouldn't you say
a different expectation from Spider-Man.
Wouldn't you say, though, in order to increase the market share of comic books, they need to stop just trying to please people who are comic book fans, and they try to get people who aren't?
Well, yes and no, but while these books are sitting on racks in direct market stores, it's not you know, my brother-in-law is not going to go seek out comics. I mean, it's I don't know. It's different.
I really think that in order to get more people, the idea is to try to change it from the thing that was always done, which would be to try to break it out of the stereotype that comics have had.
Right, but so even then, you know, Ultimates 2 is a prime example where it's not as schlocky and Silver Age as All-Star Superman was, but it has the same artist. It relates to the story. I don't know. I mean, I just feel as if that is it's an angle to the cover, and I'm not dismissing, you know, the Glenn Fabry's of the world and the Adam Hughes's of the world and whatnot. But what I'm saying is that the combination of the 3-month solicitation period to Diamond and often the poor planning, so they don't know what's going to be in the issue, so they fall back on just a pinup, combined with the apologist or, you know, kind of opportunistic use of Michael Turner or J. Scott Campbell because they can't stick to a regular schedule, so let's have them do covers for us. I just think it's at the end of the day, it's just bad for the books from a, you know, because the thing is, like, you look back at great covers. I mean, you know, I always go back to the Neil Adams X-Men covers that were amazing, amazing.
And Neil Adams made a career as cover artist for a while, didn't he?
And then he went crazy.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a whole other story.
I mean, like, I'd rather just see Ballin do covers than never see him again. Do you remember on the, was it Detective or was it Gotham?
It was one of those Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights, where, like, it was Roger Robinson inside who was doing his damnedest to do a Frank Miller type of Batman. And then Ballin did all the covers, and there was a nice continuity to it. There was three artists working on it, basically. It was the interior penciler, the cover artist, and the writer.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just something that's always bugged me and it bothers me. And it's just like I'm just tired of the painted covers, and I'm tired of just basically the covers that, like, Spider-Man. Less about the, you know, the Preachers of the World or 100 Bullets or Why the Last Man, and more about the Amazing Spider-Mans of the world. Where, like, that's just unforgivable.
See, no, I think just, they need to try to be more like the Vertigo books. I mean,
I agree. I would like to see more thinking out of the box, but have it. I mean, the Why the Last Man covers still relate to what's going on in the issue.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They're relatable. It's not fucking Y and Agent whatever 755 watching TV.
That was really bad. That example was bad.
We all agree. Like, when it's like, it's like one thing if it is specific, or if it's non-specific, yeah. But if it's just wrong. That's probably pretty bad. In stark contrast to the vitriol we all just experienced, I want to take a moment because I learned something this week that the letterer of your favorite comic books is the most underappreciated person in the world because
the unsung hero.
Oh my god! This week I was trying to learn how to. I'm working on a project where I'm producing like a short comic book, and I was trying to letter it. And I looked up like a billion tutorials, and none of them worked. Like, they'd be like, do this and do this, and then I get to like a certain point, and there just wouldn't be that button that they're talking about, or just wouldn't do what they said. I finally found something. I think it's ninjalettering.com or ninjaletters.com, if you're ever looking to do this, by the way. That I really
you should also look at balloontails.com. That's a really good site.
And judging from Josh this week, you shouldn't be looking to do this.
Yes. Don't. I mean, but like, really, there's so many things in lettering that you don't think about, and it's really specific, and it's really like, it's been taking longer than almost anything else we've been doing. It's a photo comic. It's not drawings, so we've been taking. Well, it didn't take longer than actually taking the photos. That took forever. But little things like, you know, I read, for example, like the balloon should always point to the character's mouth. And if you ever see like a balloon that's pointing towards their shoulder or something like that, like that's lazy lettering. And I'd never thought about it. Yep. And just little
one
things
word
like
for
that.
You.
Yeah.
One word, kerning.
Kerning?
Look it up.
Everybody well, think, go out and look it up.
I think lettering is kind of like scoring in films. Just if it's bad, you notice it. If it's good, you don't.
Yeah,
but that's funny that you say that because over many years I have I do look for the letterer like Chris Eliopoulos or whatever his name is. I he's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like every time he letters a book, I get psyched.
Well, so what I'm saying is that Chris Eliopoulos, VC's Corey Pettit, Clem Robbins,
Richard Starkings,
Richard Starkings Comic Craft. I like using the company names because they do it in the credits.
Yeah, Comic Craft is great. That's balloontails.com is a how-to site from Comic Craft.
That was one of the ones that didn't quite do what it was supposed to because like it was an illustrator. It was an illustrator thing, but it was like an old version on a Mac, and so it didn't match mine at all, and so I couldn't figure out what it was. But, you know, if you had that version, it would have been a great thing. But I did learn tips and stuff from that. Anyway, that's all. Just
but the point is, the letterers need more respect.
I mean, respect the letters. They do. And the one thing I got – I'm not going to say who. I sort of as a joke one time in one of my reviews wrote – I had nothing to say about the book for some reason, and I wrote – and since I don't have anything to say, let's give it to this letter, who once again is shining. 6, 7, 8 months later, I get an email, like this angry, crazy coot email going, I read your review, and I really want to say nobody appreciates me, and thank you so much. And I was like, oh, I was kind of just kidding. But since then...
And let's pray he doesn't listen to the podcast.
I don't think we have to worry about that. Yeah. He wrote to me on somebody else's email account other than his.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really big name in lettering.
You know, I think that this year at San Diego, I'm going to try to seek out letterers and get them to letter my sketches.
Ooh, that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So, anyway, so cool. Well, thank you for that, Josh.
Sorry, I just appreciate your letterers.
All right, so time for a little business. As you guys might have noticed early on in the podcast, we are welcoming our first sponsor of the podcast. Comicold.com is an awesome site, if you guys haven't checked it out, for discounted comics and trade paperbacks. They carry all new Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and Image books, and they discount them like 40% off. If you go to their site every month and pre-order the books you want, or if you prefer, we've been talking about this the past couple weeks, they do have a subscription service, and they wanted us to make sure to mention that they do ship them carefully packed, set in a box, so they come in good quality, not like the poor quality that somebody wrote in and told us about a couple of weeks ago. So, they also have trade paperbacks and hardcovers at like 30 to 50% off, and they've got stuff coming in basically every day. So check them out at comichole.com. That's comichole.com.
Can I say it now?
Sure.
It's on their site, and this is why I was like, oh, yeah, let's use them. It says from our hole to yours.
Or no, from our hole to your home.
Yeah. It's from their hole, though. And I'm okay with that.
So check them out at comichole.com and let them know that you heard about it. Let them know that you heard about it from us at ifanboy.com. They've got flexible and cheap shipping options. They've got an ironclad guarantee, and they're totally worth checking out. I'm going to start using them. So check them out today. And we've got an awesome special for you guys, our iFanboy listeners, that if you go over to comichole.com and make a purchase and use the coupon code of iFanboy, that's I-F-A-N-B-O-Y, you'll get 5% off your first purchase. That's on top of the already discounted 40 or 30 or 50% off discount. So the first time you purchase, use the coupon code iFanboy, and that's only good until the end of July, so make sure you act now before it expires.
It's got about a month.
So big thank you and big ups to comichole.com, and I just apologize for saying big ups.
Should.
What I was thinking.
Much respect to.
So comichole.com, check them out. We're very glad to have them on board to the iFanboy podcast. So,
listen to mail time, boys.
Listen to mail. What do we got, Connor?
Well, we got one from Gene. Gene wrote in to say that he agreed with us and really enjoyed Civil War number 2, thought that the disguise Steve Rogers used was a nice nod to Superman and Clark Kent. And he was also agreeing with us that Steve McNiven is really one of the top artists working right now. But he had a question. He wants to know how we would compare and contrast Marvel and DC. Not just who's better, but how are they different? And what do we like about one that we wish the other would do, or vice versa? And which things are different and which ones are just readers' preferences?
You know, to be honest, I don't really feel a difference. They're just comics to me.
No, there's a difference. There's a definite difference.
Yeah, well, I don't care.
Well, no, I'm not that you should care. I'm just saying there is one.
I think there's a line-wide tonal difference.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's almost like, to me, it feels a lot like I would have imagined the difference would have been in the 60s and 70s. Like,
yes, it's more pronounced now than it has been in a long time.
I was gonna almost make the comparison. I was almost gonna say DC. I feel is more primary color, while Marvel is more muted.
Well, that's always been the classic. That's always been the classic sort of comparison. Is like,
and I don't mean that literally. I mean that like thematically.
Right. Sure. I think that's always been the classic comparison. But I think about 5 years ago, it sort of got mixed a little bit, and people were going back and forth. And one of the things that both Dan DiDio and Quesada have done is that they gave each of their groups of comics like an overarching sort of tone. I think it's hard to put into words, but they definitely feel different.
Marvel's books seem more rooted in reality, and DC's feels more rooted in their DC world, where things are a bit more colorful. And they're both enjoyable. I like them both for their merits. And then one's not better than the other. That's just the difference right now.
You know, it was a good thing that I think I'm going to go back to that old Greg Rucka word balloon that we talked about before. He said something along.
It's tearing the comic podcast world.
I swear to God, it's the best interview ever done. Greg Rucka said something along the lines of, I don't know if I agree with this or not, but in the DC universe, 9/11 couldn't have happened.
Right,
right.
Whereas it shouldn't it happen in the happen, Marvel universe either, though.
But it did.
It shouldn't happen at all.
It shouldn't have happened. I mean, that was a huge mistake, but that's the difference. On their part. I know, but it was a huge error on their part.
Well, that's debatable.
Really? All right,
it's happened, and they should have just never referenced it again. Unfortunately, they keep referencing it, and it was a big mistake. Big mistake on that part.
Next email.
Josh, why don't you read Tim's email?
All right. Last week at the beginning of the thing, I said we were talking about Civil War II, and if you don't know what happened now, you live in a deep hole. And then the first line of this, I wanted to advise you guys of how deep a hole I live in. Tim lives in Japan, and he gets his comics through a subscription service, and for a variety of reasons, tends not to read them until the month after they arrive. So he reads his comics a lot longer, a lot after they come out. but he still likes to listen to the podcast. He wants to take the risk sometime, and he said, hey, it's Civil War II, but I'm going to go for it anyway. And, of course, within a couple of minutes, we said, hey, Spider-Man unmasked. Now, it doesn't matter that you could walk outside. I don't know if it's the same in Japan. But here you could walk outside, and people were like, do you know Spider-Man unmasked? And be like, I didn't know that, officer. Thank you. But apparently we ruined it for him, and I hope we didn't ruin it for a lot of people. But anyway, we apologize about that.
Right, and I don't want to not show sympathy to Tim.
I really do sympathize.
It's kind of your own fault, though. I don't think we can clearly make it any more clearer that this is about Civil War II.
That was the title of the episode.
Yeah, but no, I do understand, and like we said in the beginning of the podcast, it's a tough road to hoe because it's hard to talk about the books without spoiling them.
And we don't want to say, hey, don't listen, because we want them to listen. We enjoy, we like the fact that he listens. But if you're really into a book and you see it's the subject of the podcast, you may want to skip to the middle of the show.
We're not smart or quick enough to be able to do this all in pronouns.
Right. And we're not going to. It's a review show. We're not. So that's not the point of the show.
Did something that happened.
That guy, the thing, and you go, yeah, that thing. That was awesome.
Yeah, and watch our numbers drift to the bottom.
Can we plug his?
All right, he wants us to plug his podcast, and we'll do that.
I like it. From the sound of it, I'm going to check it out.
It actually relates a little to what I was saying. His target audience is people who want to develop their comics writing or drawing skills. They just got onto iTunes, and
it's called Deconstructing Comics.
Exactly, Deconstructing Comics. It can be found at globalcomics.net/podcast.
So
that sounds cool.
And Global Comics is his site as well, where he has his web comic there. So check that out as well. It's called The Crazing Spider Hag, perhaps the only comic on the web not influenced by Lord of the Rings manga or Three's Company.
All of them or any of them?
What comic is based on Three's Company?
Oh, that Scott Kurtz one.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's Three's Company-esque.
I never thought about that, yeah.
All right.
That's a fantastic. Oh, thank you, Tim. That just made my week.
The last letter, well, actually, this is not even a letter. This is unusual, but we took a question off of the website from a poster named The Bat, and he's new to the podcast.
I'd love to talk to you about that.
Yeah, let's talk about copyright infringement. he says, first off, this is my first time contributing to the website. I've been listening to the podcast for weeks now and telling my local comic shop regulars and staff all about you guys, which we really like a lot.
Thank you, The Bat, and all the rest of you should be doing this as well.
Yeah, I mean,
learn from The Bat. Do what he does.
He's a smart guy. His name is The Bat, so. He likes the podcast. He tells his friends. That's great. He was wondering why we haven't mentioned the Iron Man Execute Program storyline yet, and what have we thought about it, guys.
And he said, why not, with exclamation point and question mark.
Yeah.
Which indicates indignation.
I have not read Iron Man.
Crickets.
I don't read Iron Man.
All I know about Iron Man is he's in his underwear in the suit.
Oh, they did that one panel again.
Yeah, I hate that.
After I read the whole alcoholic storyline from the early 80s, I really didn't feel like I ever needed to read any more Iron Man. I thought that was perfection. So.
There was a really good little bit of it in the early 2000s again.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. But
John Chen, Mark Waid, was it?
No.
Quesada wrote it.
No, before him.
Yeah.
But that was supposed to be a good run. I didn't read it either.
So but none of us are reading it, yeah.
I've heard things about this, though, and I've heard it's supposed to be good, but The Bat, if you want to lend us $3, we'll buy it.
Again, the only...
Iron Man, anyway.
He's in so many of the books I'm reading as it is now. I feel like he's always in there, so...
Yeah, I'm sick of him.
Anyway. All right, so his next question is, also, what's our take on Planet Hulk? As a rule of thumb, he steers clear of space planet stories, which is like Josh. But he's been reading the Hulk, anticipating something huge at the other end of the epic. Will it have anything to do with Civil War? Especially since the Illuminati sent him into space, so he wants to know what we think of Planet Hulk. Which,
I don't want to go out on a limb here and make another prediction that will probably come true because I'm the comic god. But
gee,
but I imagine that my guess in Marvel is that Civil War will end, and then Annihilation and Planet Hulk will all come into this big, huge explosion that will happen early 2007 or
and
like
disappoint
around this time,
everyone.
Yeah, that's my guess, because there's no way that's not going to come back. But the fact that they made it a point to have in the Civil War preview to have the Illuminati to make a story point that they shot the Hulk out into space that's going to come back and bite them in the ass.
Well, it's funny that I don't read Hulk because I really like Hulk. I think maybe it's the residue of really liking the Bill Bixby TV show. But I've always liked the character, and I don't read it. I don't know why. I can't tell you why.
I can't stand the Hulk. It's like been a few times where like somebody new will come on to write it, and I'll read it for one, and I just am not interested for some reason in that character. I don't know why. Never.
So we're 0 for 2 on the Bats books.
But he did ask a question that we can answer.
Yes. Well, first, before that, he's looking forward to our coverage of the Comic-Con, which is coming up next month. We're really excited about it. We can't stop planning for it. So there's lots. We're going to have lots of cool stuff for you guys. His last question is, when is the podcast usually available for download?
So our official stance is that we shoot to make the podcast available on Sunday nights. So it's ready for all you folks who come to work on Monday morning, or for you kids who get home from school Monday afternoon. Although school's over now, isn't it? But whatever. So look for the podcast usually available Sunday night, like around 7-8 o'clock. You know, there might be the rare time where it comes out a little earlier or a little later.
Or Monday morning. And, I mean, 90% of the time it comes out Sunday night.
Yeah, and if for some reason we're delayed past Monday morning, we'll post and let you guys know. But look for it Sunday night. So
that's all for listener mail.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, we usually don't. We're not able to get it up usually earlier than that. But it will, unless, and if it's later, we'll post it up on there. So if you're going to download it, you can't check the site. We'll tell you what's going on.
Yep.
Josh, what's going on the Frapper map?
All I know is that there are 199.
More.
I thought it would be so much fun to come do the podcast right now and be like, by the way, 200. What up?
We've been at 199
and then I'd say big up to the Frapper map.
No. I kind of like the fact that we're on 199, because it shows that we've still got a ways to go.
It's just still a goal to hit.
I think I checked the Frapper map 25 times today for the.
You're obsessive
for the 200.
I really want you to go talk to somebody else.
I wish I'd known that, because I just would have signed up as somebody else.
Oh, that's not cool.
We've never done that.
We're at 199. And it's awesome, so thank you everybody. Who's
John Hook, Edible Consumer, Marco Logo, Mark Mostowat, Grumble Cakes, Juan de Jesus.
Didn't Grumble Cakes say something funny?
No, I liked what Edible Consumer said.
Maybe that's
Shout out to Greg the Flea Market Comic Guy, which just renders so many images of Greg the Flea Market Comic Guy.
I have a picture specifically of what a flea market comic book looks like, and it's an Avengers issue from 1982, and the Vision is slightly torn. I don't know.
So thank you everybody who did the Frapper map. Awesome. So
we all just lost our breath for a second there.
This
anyway.
Was tiring. This one took a lot out of me.
Wait,
I'm coming down now.
So anyway, for what the Frapper map is, it's a map. You can go to frapper.com/ifanboy, frapper.com/ifanboy, and stick it in there. Tell us where you are. Give us a little shout out on there, and
you can also go on ifanboy.com, and up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a click to check out the
Frapper. There you go. If you get a chance, please come over to ifanboy.com. The discussions are getting better and better and bigger and bigger. And there's more people who keep showing up, and it's great, because the more people show up, the level of discussion has not gone down, which doesn't seem to make any sense, but it's so cool, and we really appreciate it. You can always email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, love letters, hate mail, job offers, or marriage proposals. I had a script. I read that. But we had somebody write us about a story, and we were like, oh, yeah, we do have to put that up on the thing. So we put it up on the weblog.
We also had a listener who sent in their – They took a trip to New York, and they asked us about it on the podcast, and we told them, and then he sent us a story and pictures. We put that up on the website today. So,
if you like the show, go over to Podcast Alley and vote for us. Please vote for us. Or you can go to iTunes and leave us a review.
We got a few from last week, so thank you, anyone who did that.
Thank you. We love reading those, by the way, because it makes us feel real good. And even better than that, go to your comic shop and say, hey, I've been listening to this great podcast, or tell your friends or your mom.
Your mom.
That's weird. It creeps me out. I'm not saying that anymore. Anyway, and finally, in our last sort of bit of if you want to, if you want to contribute, you want to put a little donation in the till, we can take that. It's at the ifanboy.com/donations.
Or go to the website and click on the donations tab.
And all money goes into the show. We have a sponsor. Yes. Don't think we're rolling in it now.
We're gainfully employed aside from this. We just want to make what we do for iFanboy better for you.
We've already started.
This is so that when we have to buy equipment to go do more podcasting and go to San Diego, we're not as much in debt after it's over.
Yeah. Keyword, as much.
As much. Because I'm going to tell you, I made some purchases today for the show. I know you guys have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we haven't made that money back.
Speaking of San Diego, just to remind everybody, we're going to be there next month. We're going to have full in-depth coverage. We're going to cover it every day. We're probably going to update daily from the con, or at least around the con. And then we're going to do a daily podcast, which will probably be a disaster.
And it will be awesome.
But quite amusing.
And then at the end of the week, we're going to be on the podcasting panel with Fanboy Radio and Comic Geek Speak and Word Balloon
Indie
and some other podcasts.
Word Balloon, and Comic Selected Library.
It's going to be a veritable all-stars.
Oh, God, I'm totally leaving somebody out. Augie's Pipeline.
An all-star lineup of podcasts.
Yeah, so if you're going to be at the con,
and it's
going to
be moderated by writer B. Clay Moore.
And it's kind of the thing where, like, if you ever listen to radio a lot and you like really like the person you listen to on the radio and then you see them in person and you go, oh. I have a feeling it's going to be like that.
I see why it's called Man Cow.
It's like the first time I saw Howie Rose, it was just like, oh, he's got a face for radio. So
if you're going to be in San Diego, come check it out. Sunday morning at 11, I think it is, right?
It's going to be 11:30, room 8, yeah. I believe.
We'll give you more details. We'll get to
totally.
This. But so next month, look out for San Diego. But next week, look out around midweek, maybe Wednesday or Thursday, we're going to have a special edition podcast dedicated to Superman Returns.
Just like we did for X-Men.
It
hopefully
sucks. Wait, no, I haven't seen it. Sorry.
Hopefully not as controversial as the X-Men podcast.
Listen.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a little more positive.
How much more fun was it to have all that controversy, though?
I enjoyed it.
Who wants a big love fest for this? It was really cool. Yeah, it was cool. Well, what do we got then? Nothing.
All right, so look out for that sometime next week in addition to the normal Sunday podcast.
Yeah. We got a lot going on in iFanboy World. We'd like to take you along for the ride.
That's all. Good night, everybody. I'm Josh.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Ron.
And love your letterers.
That means brother in French. I don't know why I know that. I took 4 years of Spanish.